Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Marijuana, or cannabis, has been with us for millennia, used for various purposes in various forms, often for medicinal as well as recreational purposes. Like many drugs, it has been persona non grata in this country for many years, but things are changing and in a hurry. In a few minutes, we'll talk about efforts to decriminalize and legalize recreational marijuana, but we'll begin by talking about its legal use as a medication. Two dozen states have adopted medical marijuana laws. It's proven effective for numerous medical conditions, including relief of pain for seriously ill patients and relief of discomfort for cancer patients undergoing chemotherapy. Governors Nixon and Quinn have signed bills allowing a cannabis oil known as CBD for use under stringent regulation by people suffering from epilepsy. With us to talk about medical marijuana, Sergeant Jason Grellner with Franklin County Drug Enforcement and Vice President of the National Narcotics Officers Association. Darrell Bertrand joins us by phone from Ozark, Missouri. He suffers from a degenerative disc disease and stenosis of the spine and has used marijuana as pain relief medication in the past, but he can't anymore. It's a complicated story. So, Darrell, I'll begin with you, if I may. If you give me the Cliff Notes version of your medical condition and use of marijuana.
The Cliff Notes version is basically in 2003, I was diagnosed with degenerative disc disease, spondylolisthesis of the spine, and spinal stenosis with a 13-millimeter gap in my spine that would move around. Upon my diagnosis, the doctors prescribed me all sorts of painkillers and muscle relaxants. Within 18 months, I had endured multiple liver failures that had almost killed me. The second liver failure, they attributed it to the big pharma, the pain medication. Any mixture of that with my liver, it shuts it down. Basically, so my options for any relief of pain became null and void, but I had a brother who was out west and is epileptic and lives epileptic-free in a medical marijuana state. Went out and visited him and came back with some seeds of a specific strain of cannabis and grew my own pain relief medicine for many years. And it kept me working, successful business owner. Then in 2008, I had a bad slip and fall accident and broke my back. My L4 basically crushed my L5 and was sitting on my S1. It was pretty ugly. It was protruding out my lower back. So basically, you can say at that point, my consumption of cannabis increased greatly from what it was. I didn't hide my cannabis use from my doctors. They all knew about it. In April 2009, I was finally able to have a spinal fusion surgery to fix my back. It failed within a week. I had to have a second emergency surgery. I have two 12 screws, two rods, and a plate in my back. I took a few pictures of my grow-op when it was going on. I deleted those pictures, but I got a virus on my computer. I subsequently brought my computer into a local retailer here in town to have it hit, and they sent the pictures into the police, and they got raided 4 days after my second surgery.
Okay, let me just establish a couple of things. We don't have the best connection in the world here. I'll just have to tell you that. So speak up if you can. Your use of marijuana obviously was helpful to you.
Yes.
You were, and when you were using it, you were using it illegally.
Yes, I used it through a vaporizer also.
Right, and when it was discovered that you were using it, what happened?
Basically, criminally, I was raided by a drug task force. My home slash business was raided by a drug task. I went to a SWAT raid.
Were you sent to prison?
No, I got lucky.
How so?
I got 5 years probation because I've never ever been in trouble with the law in my life before.
Right, and have you had an opportunity to use marijuana for your problem since that time?
I have not for 4 years.
Okay. Stand by. Let me go to Sergeant Grellner here. Sergeant, what do you make of this story? We've heard the stories before about how effective marijuana can be, cannabis can be, in dealing with pain issues.
Well, and the problem is it's not sold to us for pain issues. It's sold to us for HIV/AIDS. It's sold to us for end-of-life cancer patients. It's sold to us for a multitude of horrible diseases. And what we find is, through studies in Colorado and in California, that greater than 80% of the users are white males between the ages of 17 and 32 with no history of any medical disease at all, but a history of criminal activity and substance abuse problems. And there's a reason, Don, that we have the FDA. There's a reason that we have doctors in the United States. There's a reason that we allow these products to go through FDA testing to make sure that they're safe, they're reliable, and those sorts of things. And you won't find a single medical association in the United States that backs the use of crude marijuana for any sort of disease at the current time.
But also we have to point out that I think it's 24, 25 states, something like that, have approved the use of medical marijuana.
With Missouri coming on board now, I think in Illinois we're at about 24. We were at 22. And I'd like to point out that the 22 states that have legalized some form of medical or recreational marijuana occupy the top 24 positions for child use rates in the United States. This is just a footstep into legalization, which leads to higher use among youth who have higher addictive rates. 1 in 6 kids who try marijuana will become addicted. We know that. 1 in 9 adults who try marijuana will become addicted. And we're opening the door into that realm that we don't want to open.
Let me turn to you, Daryl. You obviously wanted to get in there and say something.
Yeah, I missed part of it due to my phone having an issue. I don't agree with everything he says. Who has the patents on medical cannabis? I would ask Mr. Grellner that. The federal government does. And you have a police branch called the DEA that doesn't want to get it, that is preventing it from being...
And that's completely wrong.
Having studies done, and the Department of Health wants to, the DEA doesn't want to. And has been holding it up for many, many, many years.
Well, let's get some input here from Sergeant Grellner on that. He is with the law enforcement. Go ahead, Sergeant.
And that's completely incorrect. The DEA works with NIDA, and NIDA and the DEA set the parameters for research. DEA has never turned down a single licensing for scientific research into medical marijuana. There are already 3 products that are prescribable by doctors on the market today. There are several others, including Epidiolex, which is a CBD cannabinoid oil that is being looked at through a company known as GW Pharmaceuticals for the treatment of 2 forms of epilepsy in children. So to say that the government is stifling research is just incorrect. They're not stifling it at all. In fact, they're fast-tracking the GW Pharmaceuticals product at the current time.
Sergeant, is there a place, however, do you think, for medical marijuana in our society today?
No, I don't think that you can say medical marijuana unless you want to say medical opium. We don't smoke opium.
Hold it one at a time, please.
We don't smoke opium for the benefits of morphine. We allowed research to dictate what parts of the opium plant had medical usefulness in our society.
They drink alcohol for the taste?
Some people actually do. They don't drink it just to get drunk. We need to do the research.
Hey, listen, I'm going to ask you. Daryl, I'm going to ask you. Daryl, hold on. We can only handle this one at a time. Let him finish, then you talk, and vice versa, okay?
Yeah,
go ahead, Sergeant.
And we hardly ever call alcohol medicine. So we know from the opium plant that we can extract synthetics and semi-synthetics, things like hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, codeine, hydromorphone, all of these different drugs that have different interactions with the body because we've done research on them. We know their synergistic effects. We know proper dosing to weight ratio with individuals. We know who should be using them. Those are the sorts of things that we rely on, scientific evidence, not anecdotal evidence. And we don't allow legislature to tell us what is medicine. We allow science to tell us what is medicine because we want our medicines to be 2 things, 1 safe and 2 effective. We need to do research to find out both of those.
Has no research been going on in conjunction with the 2 dozen states or so that have legalized it?
Oh, there's research going on right now. Like I said, there are numerous. I think when I last talked to DEA, something like 278 licenses were out for research. You know, GW Pharmaceuticals is doing their research and asking. Two states this year, I might get this wrong, but I believe it's New York and Georgia, possibly a third, Alabama, have actually put state money forward to researching Epidiolex to help GW Pharmaceuticals move a marijuana product forward, a marijuana derivative product forward to help children with epilepsy and maybe others with epilepsy. But they're doing it through science and research and studies, not somebody saying, it made my back feel better.
Well, as a matter of fact, as I noted in the introduction, both Governors Nixon and Quinn have signed legislation for CBD, which is what you just talked about, the oil extract, if you will. So that is therefore given a clean bill of health in a sense. It is effective in dealing with epilepsy.
And it's not, and we don't know that. In fact, the studies are just starting. And the problem is that anybody that, you know, first off, it's going to be months, if not years, down the road before there's any CBD oil available from Missouri. Just because of all of the hoops that they're going to have to jump through to get there through our Department of Health, through our Department of Agriculture. But beyond that is anybody that does receive CBD oil through that won't be part of this study. So they're actually not part of the population that is actually going to help bring these products to market. We want as many kids or people involved in scientific research as possible, because if this is good medicine and this does help people, who wouldn't want it out there to help people?
No one is available right now. Those studies are all full. They're talking about no new patients can go into it. And if we can backtrack a little bit, all those medicines that are approved by the DEA and the FDA that you mentioned a moment ago, Mr. Brelmer, they killed over 10,000 people last year.
I'm not quite sure where you're getting those numbers. Merrill, we've done some research on this here in advance of the program. I've seen nothing indicating that sort of thing.
Narcotic pain medication, overdoses, and all such and such, but narcotic pain medicine has killed over 10,000 people in the U.S. every year.
Accidental. You're talking about opioids. I thought you were talking about the things like Marinol from THC.
Oxycontin. All the ones you mentioned, or every single one you mentioned earlier that are approved by the FDA,
are killing
how many people every year?
The overdose death rate in the United States last year was
not,
its highest.
Not necessarily overdose, or it being the drug causing the death and not the overdose.
Well,
it's a cumulative number.
It's the overdose, if you let me tell you. The overdose on narcotics was about 32,000, and overdose from narcotic pain relievers, I believe, was in and around 20,000 of that.
Okay. Well, how many people died from an overdose from cannabis last year or ever?
Well, it all depends on what you call an overdose. A college student from Wyoming that jumped to his death off of the hotel in Denver, Colorado after eating a cannabis edible, I would say, was an overdose death.
That's up to debate also.
Well, let's go
so
back
there's,
to...
So there's one person then?
No, that's just the one that came to mind.
Well, there are other cases in which marijuana has been involved in deaths of others at the hands of people.
Scientifically proven?
Well, it's been proven by law enforcement. Let me come back to our discussion, though. Daryl, you're having a problem talking over people, and I wish you'd just let one or the other of us finish before you continue. Have you heard anything up to this point that would dissuade you, given your own background and use of marijuana, that would cause you to say, I'm not going to use that anymore?
No, I can't take anything else because my option is liver failure and death if I try to take anything for any type of pain relief, have any surgical procedure, anything. I'm in a tough scenario. So I have one option. I know what my option is.
So one would get the sense that perhaps you're still finding a way to use it.
No. I have to take regular drug tests.
Okay. Now, what is your campaign like? I know you're waging a campaign down in that part of Missouri. You're involved in the Show Me Cannabis organization. You're planning to take this to a new level. Is that correct?
Yes, I would like to see cannabis regulated and taxed like alcohol.
And how are you going about that?
Me, I'm just active. I let people know about what cannabis has done for me and how it saved my life and how prohibition has ruined it, and that this country is saving a lot of people's lives in the first place. I don't agree with that. Why and how it would.
Darryl, we're having an awful time. I don't know where you are and what sort of equipment you're using, but you're fading out. We can hardly hear you. I think unless we get that corrected in the next minute or two, we're going to have to let you go. We'll take a break, and we'll do that now. We're talking about medical marijuana, good idea or bad. My guest in studio is Sergeant Jason Grellner with Franklin County Drug Enforcement. And joining us by phone with, unfortunately, a very bad connection is Darryl Bertrand. He had used marijuana for pain relief from his degenerative disc disease pain, no longer using it, and would like to get back on that track. We'll get back on our conversation in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. Our subject today is marijuana. We're talking initially about the medical use of marijuana. A little bit later, we're going to be talking about decriminalization and legalization of it. But before we continue, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. More than 12,000 members of the Veterans of Foreign Wars of the United States holding their 115th National Convention in St. Louis, and the gathering is attracting a slew of politicians, both Missouri Senators Roy Blunt and Claire McCaskill, as well as Vice President Joe Biden, addressed the group. They had some harsh words for the Veterans Administration. And in West County, the Board of Chesterfield Arts has announced that the group will probably cease operations at the end of August. The organization recently lost its facility and could not find a way to continue its education, performance, and other outreach efforts. You can learn more about these and other stories this afternoon on 90.7 FM and throughout the day at stlouispublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation about the medical use of marijuana. With me in studio is Sergeant Jason Grellner with the Franklin County Drug Enforcement and Vice President of the National Narcotics Officers Association. We're joined by phone from with Darryl Bertrand. He has used medical marijuana for pain relief from his degenerative disc pain in the past, I should say. Darryl, we're going to try again. I hope we have a better line with you. Still there?
How's that sound?
Oh, it sounds a lot better. Let me go back to you, Sergeant, with what you've been hearing from Jason. Is there anything that's changing your thinking on this subject?
No, I believe that there is probably medical usefulness locked away somewhere inside the cannabis plant, as we know that there is medical usefulness in numerous plants throughout the world. But we don't roll up those plants and smoke them and call them medicine without proper medical research, without proper medical findings, without going through and making sure that those two things that we want all of our medicine to be, and that's safe and effective.
Right. I want to take a couple of calls now. Folks are interested in this subject, obviously, and we'll bring in Ann calling from St. Louis. Ann, go ahead, please. You're on the air.
Yes. Thank you, by the way, for having this show. I hope it's the first of many because it's a very touchy subject, but it's a very important subject. In 1975, I was told by my neurosurgeon that I needed major back surgery and I'd be partially disabled my whole life. Now, I was on all those medications and all the drugs and for 2.5 years, and I was disabled. By the grace of God, I was taken to a natural doctor and taken off all of those drugs. And in 8 days, I was pain-free and not disabled anymore. I went back to all my doctors. They wouldn't believe me. They thought I was going to be back. One woman had told me that I should take marijuana instead of drugs. I did try it, but it made me lackadaisical. It was not good for me. I think anything you smoke is not good for you. So I went on natural organic herbs like we have at Cheryl's Herbs here in St. Louis. And I am making history in my family as the healthiest senior in the history of my family. No surgeries, no illnesses, but I stay off of all toxins. I stay off of coffee. I stay off of alcohol, sugar. Anything toxic, and any animal products. I'm a vegan since 1975,
so
when I reversed this condition.
You're crediting marijuana for your relief. Is that correct, or
no,
is it
no,
the
no,
others?
No. Natural organic herbs like golden seal herbal tea, peppermint tea, marijuana, in those days at least, they used to smoke it. It made me very tired. It made me lethargic. It made me a little crazy. I didn't like that. But I don't think anything toxic is good for you. I think if you want to really take your health and your life in your own hands, you change your lifestyle. And you get healthy like President Clinton did. I mean, he became a vegan and totally reversed his health. And I have a feeling he's, you know, on really organic, healthy things.
Okay. Sergeant Grelny, your thoughts about what Ann is saying?
Well, sure. Certainly, there's those people out there that change their lifestyle. It'll be drop meat, drop dairy, drop different things. I would say that, again, that's something you want to do under at least some medical or professional advice before you change your eating habits. Make sure you're getting the right vitamins and minerals that you want to have. Again, those aren't regulated items because they don't change the brain chemistry that we see with marijuana, especially marijuana today with THC levels that are ranging 20-30%. And now we're seeing vaporizing marijuana at 90%, not the 1.5-3% marijuana that was the 1970s, 80s, and early 90s.
Daryl, have you tried other things? Have you tried herbs and spices and whatever, the kinds of things that Ann has talked about?
I have tried it a little bit, yes, and had some minor help from it. But cannabis also is a natural herb, just like what she's talking about. There's other ways of taking it, oiling it, juicing it, all sorts of wonderful things from the God-given plant.
Sergeant, you have a chemistry background. Is that correct?
A minor one, yes, sir.
And what you've just heard from Daryl, is that square with what you know?
Well, I just wanted to go back. You know, earlier Daryl had said in his comments that he vaporized his marijuana when he was using it. And a couple of things from Daryl's case that really didn't lead to that. When law enforcement went to his house, first and foremost, they found almost 50 mature growing marijuana plants. They found scales. They found baggies and heat sealers. They found jars of marijuana, bags of marijuana. They found grinders. They found rolling papers. They found marijuana roaches from smoking marijuana. And so those things don't lend themselves to medical marijuana, what we see. 5 million people a year die from cigarette smoke and smoking. Yet some of the literature I've seen from California advocates the actual smoking of marijuana for emphysema and asthma. And again, this is from marijuana experts, not from doctors. And so what I would say is that you just need to watch and where you're getting your information and make sure that you're getting solid and good information from true professionals.
Daryl, as our time winds down, what about these findings?
I was growing strictly for personal use, or I would have been charged for distribution if I was selling it. I wasn't getting a lot of yield off my plants. Grelner obviously would know that the yield can vary from every plant to plant, and I was growing about a year's supply at a time. So basically, out of that, the 48 plants, actually, they inventoried 47 plants, not 50. But there was 48. One magically disappeared somehow. It was a little under 2 pounds for a year in my supply.
And also, you made statements to law enforcement that you were actually distributing to people who were helping you, but only would distribute to friends. And distribution charge is the same as manufacturing in the state of Missouri.
I did not sell to anybody. When I was in the hospital, I had a couple of friends who tended the garden for me who got stuff out of the garden when I couldn't take care of it. I guess you can call me giving it to them is selling it, right?
Distribution is what we call it, sir.
Again, getting back to
giving it to a fellow patient who needs it for a debilitating condition also.
We are going to move along to another part of the story with regard to the use of marijuana, Daryl. I'll give you a chance for a final thought. Is there a final word you'd like to leave us with? I guess not. Thanks, Daryl Bertrand. Sergeant Grelner will be staying with us for the next segment when we'll look at the trend toward legalization and decriminalization of marijuana. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back. The city of St. Louis recently relaxed its laws on marijuana use and possession. Washington State and Colorado have passed statewide laws legalizing pot. These changes have been well publicized and both lauded and soundly criticized by some. Clearly, the public mood concerning marijuana is shifting after its having been demonized for generations. What about this trend, good idea or bad? Sergeant Jason Grellner with Franklin County Drug Enforcement and Vice President of the National Narcotics Officers Association remains with us for this segment. Jeffrey Mittman is Executive Director of the American Civil Liberties Union, Missouri. He joins me now in studio. Also joining us by phone from Colorado is Rachel Gillette, Executive Director of Colorado's National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, NORML, an organization that lobbies to legalize marijuana. Thank you all so much for being with us once again, and Jeffrey, for you staying with us. Good to see you. Sergeant Grellner. Jeffrey, let me turn to you. You've been listening to the earlier segment. What's your takeaway from what you've been hearing?
You know, one, thanks for letting the ACLU share our thoughts. To be very clear, the ACLU supports full legalization of marijuana, taxation, and regulation. That's not to say that we think marijuana is necessarily a good thing or a bad thing. The same way that tobacco is legal, alcohol is legal, there are clearly public health issues that people debate and look at. The issue is, does prohibition work? Is the war on drugs working? And more specifically, does the war on marijuana working? And we think the evidence from the FBI is resounding that it is not. If we know something is failing, we need to stop and look at a better answer. And clearly, legalization, regulation, taxation is a much better answer.
Jason, you're shaking your head, as I suspected you would. You deal with this every day.
Yes. And, you know, I keep hearing it over and over again. Prohibition doesn't work. Prohibition doesn't work. Prohibition works. Prohibition works fine. When you look at the number of people that drink alcohol, which is a regulated and taxed entity, you're looking at 52% of the public. When you look at cigarettes that are regulated and taxed, you're looking at 26.7%. When you look at marijuana use, which is a criminal activity, you're looking at 7.3% of the overall population. You know, prohibition doesn't work only if you want zero to be your absolute answer. If that were the case, then we should relax laws on burglary, on homicide, on assault, on everything else, because we can't get those to zero either. We know that the highest use rates in the country were in the mid-1970s, when over 14% of the country was using some sort of illegal substance, and those rates dropped to less than 8%, close to 7% during the early 90s.
Does it make any difference to you that 50% of the American public is in favor of legalization?
It just means to me that they're not getting the right information, because what's being shared with them about how if we tax and regulate this that we're going to be able to make all of this money, we're going to be able to improve schools, we're going to be able to do all these things is not working. It's not working in Colorado. The tax that they're supposed to be bringing in is and what they are bringing in aren't even close together. Use rates, especially in the Boulder School District and the Denver School District, are through the roof, and that wasn't supposed to happen. They're marketing these things to kids with lollipops and candy bars and cereals and ring pops. This is what comes with legalization.
Let's turn to Rachel now, Rachel Gillette in Colorado. Rachel, you just heard that, what sounds like an indictment of what you've been doing out there for a little while now. What do you think?
Well, I obviously disagree with most of what he said. I will say that that it is working in Colorado, and when you say when you talk about the tax revenue, we've now received over $35 million at the state level in tax revenue from the sale of marijuana. I disagree that these products are being marketed to children. That's just not true. And I will say that there is CDC data from 2009 to 2011 that showed that Colorado's teen use rate decreased actually 2.8% during the time when Colorado licensed more than 500 medical marijuana centers starting in 2010. And I just want to mention that I think the term controlled substances is an oxymoron. I mean, really what we're doing is we're putting the control of these substances by prohibiting them in the hands of drug cartels, criminal street gangs, black market sellers. And just to give you an illustrative point, you can get drugs in prison. Which clearly tells me that our controlled substances laws are not working in this country. And I would venture to say that most people don't think that we're better off now as far as drugs in their community and substance abuse today than we were 5 years ago. And if a program isn't working, then something needs to change.
Jeffrey, you've been sitting here nodding with everything that Rachel is saying. You're obviously on the same page.
Agree. And there's another issue. One, again, I would say prohibition is not working. Let's look at the statistics. The war on drugs, specifically what has become the war on marijuana, if we look at arrest rates and conviction rates and targeting of resources, both nationally and here in Missouri, there is a significant and severe racial component to the war on marijuana. This is from the FBI's own data. When we are 3 to 6 to, in some places, 18 times more likely to target the African-American community for drug use, we have to question, what is going on? Why are we spending money? Again, we know prohibition for alcohol, that's what created the gangs, that's what created Capote, etc. We know prohibition is not working. We need to look at the human cost and violence. And our arrests here, our convictions here in Missouri, they're not for selling. They're not for distribution. They're not for driving under the influence. 90% for simple possession of marijuana. We need to ask ourselves, even if we accept what the sergeant is saying, that prohibition does work, at what cost? Do we want to lock up 90% of people for possession when they're not doing any violent activity, when they're not doing criminal activity, when they're not driving under the influence? We have to ask, what's the cost benefit?
Go ahead, Sergeant Grelner.
Well, and they're not locked up in prison. Less than 0.1% of all prisoners are in prison for possession of marijuana. What we need to be talking about is smart rehabilitation. You know, there's a difference between decriminalization and legalization.
Sure.
Decriminalization is may remove some of the criminal factors to the, but still has some social ramifications to the act. And what we're looking at is when you've got a drug that is proven scientifically to have addiction rates of 1 in 9 for adults, 1 in 6 for kids. What we need to be looking at is while we have these people under the thumb, how are we going to treat them so that they don't continue to abuse a dangerous drug and move on to other dangerous drugs? How do we get money into rehabilitation? How do we get money into prevention so that we can prevent people from ever starting down the road to addiction and abuse? Because as a law enforcement officer, we don't go out every day. My captain never sent me out and said, Grelner, I want you to go out and make marijuana arrests today. We go out and make arrests, and it ends up that people have marijuana on them. And so when you look – when you talk to law enforcement, as I have throughout my career, and you ask them, out of everything that you've done negating traffic offenses, what is the one overriding factor that becomes apparent to you? And when they tell you that 85 to 95% of the time they're dealing with individuals that have a drug or alcohol abuse problem, whether it's bad checks or murder – our assault, our stealing, it comes down to an addictive problem, and that's what we need to treat.
Rachel, let me come back to you with regard to what's going on in Colorado. How long has it been legal in Colorado?
Well, we've had the regulation of medical marijuana businesses, meaning state licensure and local licensure of these businesses since 2010. They're highly regulated. And then, obviously, Amendment 64 passed in 2012, and we have had recreational sales and essentially recreational marijuana stores that opened up starting January 1st of this year. And what we've seen is actually a decrease in crime in places like Denver, which has over 200 licensed marijuana stores. In fact, the murder rate went down 52% since the recreational sales began in the passage of Amendment 64.
But a couple of things have been going on that we've been reading about and people across the country have. You mentioned earlier on in your comments about it's not being marketed to kids, but kids are finding it because apparently the edibles are a big problem. As I understand it, Washington State is not marketing edibles at all, but it's coming in the form of candy and soda and various things. Kids are getting it. There are at least two high-profile deaths that have been attributed to this. And, you know, even pets are being affected by finding some of these edibles and consuming them. Sounds like that's a real problem that has to be fixed.
Well, just so you know, the issue regarding edibles and educating the public about their use, as well as properly labeling them. First of all, the labels are pretty substantial as far as edible products in Colorado already, but they are writing additional rules to address those issues. As far as edible labeling and also educating the public on their use. I would say the incidents that you refer to are isolated incidents. And just so you know, the man who murdered his wife was actually on a prescription drugs as well. So you really cannot attribute that incident directly to his having perhaps consumed a marijuana edible at some point prior to the event. There's a lot of things that went into that scenario, including the fact that the police did not respond within, I think, 11 minutes or something to the 911 call. So, I think that there are some growing pains. Absolutely, I think that we need to educate the public. And I think what our goal is here, ultimately, by regulating the sale of marijuana and providing regulatory oversight, is to make sure that first of all, consumers have a safe product to consume, which you don't get the benefit of when there's a black market, that people are asked for their ID when they go into a marijuana store. And I don't know if you've read, but there was an undercover operation where they did a sort of sting operation to see if any of these marijuana businesses were selling to people under the age of 21, and the passage rate was 100%. They did not catch one business that was selling to anyone under the age of 21. I think we all have the same goals in mind here, to keep marijuana out of the hands of children. Are there some things that we could work on? Absolutely. Reform is a process. It takes a lot of time. You can't have all the answers the minute that the law changes. So it's something that we're working on. But I think it's something, Colorado's experiment is certainly something that other states could learn from, and we certainly have seen a lot of benefits. And I think if you want to keep marijuana out of the hands of children, the best way to do it is to regulate it and tax it and make sure that an ID is asked for when people purchase it. I mean, you don't see people on college campuses or in schools, trading in rye whiskey or bourbon. And the reason is because it's regulated. And I would, it used to be that, any kid with $500 could go to the black market dealer. We're trying to get away from that to make it a safer environment for everybody.
Sergeant Grelli, you hardly contain yourself.
Yeah, because all of the data that's out there doesn't prove that. We're not keeping it out of the hands of children. Again, the 22 states that had regulated and medicalized raw marijuana occupied 22 of the top 24 positions for highest youth rates in this country. We're not keeping it out of the hands of our children. When you've got things like Butterfinger, marijuana-infused candy bars, when you've got marijuana-infused drinks, when you've got vaporizing pens that look like highlighters that are marketed to kids and other things, And expulsion rates are up throughout Colorado for use of narcotics, from 3,736 in the 08-09 school year to over 5,200, almost 5,300 in the 11-12 school year, and that's before it even becomes legal. That's why it's medical marijuana.
I want to get back to Rachel on that, but Jeffrey Mittman, go ahead.
Yeah, there's a problem here. Let's just take a very conservative approach to the question we're discussing. Let's look at pure dollars and cents. If the intention is to protect the public, to promote public health, to stop abuse and addiction, to educate the public, and to keep drugs out of the hands of children, that all requires resources. What we are currently doing is wasting resources on a failed war on drugs, a failed war on marijuana. We're not putting money into substance abuse treatment. We're not putting money into education. We're targeting communities of color. And we have problems with all substances being used by adults, all substances being used by children, alcohol, tobacco, marijuana. They're the same. They need to be treated the same. And to disingenuously focus on anecdotal issues of use of or purported marketing is dodging the question. And we have to go back to the fact prohibition does not work. We're wasting several billion dollars a year on a war that has not worked.
Let me get one other issue on the table here, if I can. Time's a waste, and I want to get some listeners into the discussion. And I'll take this to you, Rachel. In your debate over whether or not to move as you have in Colorado, what was the discussion like with regard to marijuana as a gateway drug? We hear so much about that. Is it?
I would disagree with the classification of marijuana as a gateway drug. I mean, I would say that studies show that, you know, out of all of the substances that people may try first, they're going to be trying cigarettes, alcohol, and then prescription medications before they're going to be trying marijuana. So which is it? I just don't agree with that type of terminology about marijuana.
Sergeant?
And although there was a large growth in prescription drug abuse, it never actually reached that of marijuana. And I have worked in treatment court programs for 10 years. And when you interview these individuals coming into our treatment court programs, they say that they started their drug abuse with marijuana and alcohol when they were between the ages of 10 and 14 years old. The gentleman to my left is correct. We're not going – first off, he's incorrect. We've never had a war on drugs. If we had a war on drugs, we would enlist our military. We know where drugs are grown throughout this world. We would have boots on the ground. We'd have bombs in the air. We'd have our Navy involved. We would crush countries. We would burn down poppy fields and coca fields. None of that in large scale has ever been done. We have a police action. And the police need help from prevention and treatment. We need smart law enforcement. We need prevention programs that are working with law enforcement and with rehabilitation together. Letting something out because you say – and again, nobody can ever define why prohibition isn't working. You can look at the numbers. You can see that regulation of alcohol and tobacco has much higher use rates, have 5 million people a year dying from cigarette use and tobacco use, and only 7.3% are using marijuana under prohibition when double and triple and seven times as much are using alcohol.
I think it was Richard Nixon who declared a war on drugs.
There's an absolute war on drugs. And, you know, there's a young child in the hospital right now whose chest was blown out by a flashbang. We have militarized the police actions against purported drug users and possessors. It has reached crisis epidemics. There are populations in cities across this country who are being militarily attacked. I mean, it's not hyperbole. And the sergeant knows this. The tactics and the grants from the federal government to target these communities. And in fact, since 2001, arrest rates have gone up for marijuana possession. We are increasing the war on marijuana, and we can't deny that.
That's because there's a greater availability of marijuana coming from the 22 states that are supposedly using it for medicine.
The majority of marijuana, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, comes from Mexico. From the cartel. We are giving business incentives to dangerous narcotic cartels in Mexico.
Who do you think is putting the marijuana in the dispensaries in Colorado?
Actually, the businesses themselves have been required to grow at least 70% of what they sell, and then they can buy the other 30% only from licensed businesses.
I see. And so there's no cartel.
Cartels.
Correct.
No, not in Colorado.
Right, and there was no
one at a time.
Understood. And just in the same way that when we built Vegas, organized crime wasn't involved in legal gambling anymore. That's just not happening.
First of all, yes, it is. I mean, it's a highly regulated industry.
Because and you guys had seed to sale ready to go on January 1 when it took over.
We have seed to sale tracking. So everything is tracked seed to sale.
So you had all of the tabs ready to go on January 1?
For recreational sales, yes. I mean, you could not open unless you were on the seed to sale tracking system, period.
Let me go to the phones. Our time is getting away, and I want to get some folks into the discussion. Mike will be our first guest from the audience. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi there. I think that one of the fundamental underpinnings of this whole discussion is where is the cannabis actually coming from? When the Single Convention Against Narcotic Drugs, which is the primary international drug control treaty controlling cannabis, when that was passed, the majority of cannabis was making its way from what we would call the developing countries and into the developed world. Towards the end of the 20th century, and especially into the 21st now, we see a dramatic shift towards domestic production. What this means for countries is that it is no longer an issue of policing our borders and trying to keep what, you know, is considered a dangerous substance from getting into the country. It's now that it's actually here and being produced here, what are we going to do about it?
All right. Thank you for the call. Time's getting away. I want to get a response to that. We'll start with you, Rachel. I think we kind of covered that ground just prior to his call. Rachel?
I think the whole point of what Colorado has done is to keep production wholly intrastate. A marijuana business in Colorado cannot buy marijuana from somebody who's grown it in their basement, nor can they buy it from somebody who's grown it in California. And I would like to say, too, that, you know, when it comes to, controlled substances, really the control is in the hands of these illegal drug traffickers and also terrorists who protect them. So, if we're fighting a war on terrorism, I don't know why we are continuing to allow this model to be perpetrated, because it just does not work.
Let me get a quick response from the sergeant and also from Jeffrey before I take one more call.
Well, we can just see again from the data, Colorado marijuana interdiction seizures in 2005 were 54, and in 2011 they were 321. And the amounts of marijuana that were being seized in Colorado in 2009 was 1,623 pounds, and in 2012 it was 7,008 pounds. So obviously, marijuana is coming into Colorado from outside the state and making its way there to be sold.
Jeffrey? This is a complex question, and what I'd like to do is refer the listeners to the ACLU's website. We have a report there that uses the FBI's own crime data so that your listeners can look at the data themselves.
We'll put a link.
Go to the website and take a look at the report. The numbers are stunning. Again, this is FBI data, and again, we have to go the right direction.
We'll put a link to your site on ours at STLpublicradio.org. A final call from Bill, who's waited the longest in St. Louis. Go ahead, Bill, but make it quick, please.
Yes. Thank you so much for the show. It's just such a great show. I only have one point, and I'm no big fan of marijuana. I'm almost 70. I've never used it. I'm never going to use it, even if it was legal. But the legislature's never going to do it. The anecdotal evidence on the oil for medicinal purposes isn't that great. But it's time to put it to the people for a vote, both on medical marijuana and recreational marijuana, and let the people decide. We shouldn't impose it on our state, but we should let the people decide, and then the two sides can make their case, and we'll go where we're supposed to go. And thank you again for such a great show.
Let me stop you there, Bill. Thank you for calling. Very, very quickly, I'll start with you, Rachel. Should this be put in the hands of the people?
Absolutely. I think each state should be able to decide what is best for their communities. And to go a step further, each local jurisdiction in Colorado can decide whether they want to allow recreational marijuana sales in Colorado. Uh-huh. There are many jurisdictions that have said, no, we don't want this, which in my opinion really just supports a black market, because it doesn't change the fact that people are smoking marijuana, growing marijuana, and using marijuana in those communities. They just go to the next, to Denver or wherever there is a recreational store where they can purchase it legally.
All right. Pardon me for cutting you off. Time's getting away. Sure. I want to give our other guests a chance. Very, very quickly, 30 seconds, put it to a vote.
I would tell the people to go to allaboutsam.com, which is Smart Approaches to Marijuana, that talks about the fact that we need prevention, enforcement, smart enforcement, rehabilitation working together to solve the problem. We don't need more addicts. We don't need people losing IQ points while they're not even born yet, which we see a 3 to 5 IQ point drop in mothers using while they're pregnant. We need smart approaches to marijuana. We don't need legalization, and we need to make sure research and science rules the day.
In 20 seconds, vote.
I think the sergeant and I can agree we need rehabilitation and prevention efforts, and that comes from taxation, legalization, regulation.
All righty. Well, gentlemen and lady, I want to thank you so much for being with us. A very fast hour. I certainly wish we had more time, and I think some of our callers we couldn't get to think so as well. Thank you very much, Jeffrey Mittman, for being with us from the ACLU. Sergeant Jason Greller, thank you for being with us for the entire program from Franklin County. And Rachel Gillette, thank you so much for filling us in on what's going on in Colorado and your position on the situation there. Thank you.
All right. Thank you
so much. Tomorrow in St. Louis on the Air, a little more than 6 months following the merger between St. Louis Public Radio and the St. Louis Beacon, we'll take a look at the progress that's been made and what challenges remain. Then we'll talk with former U.S. Congressman Todd Akin about his new book, Firing Back, Taking on the Party Bosses and Media Elite to Protect Faith and Freedom. Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.